Chapter 10, The Murky World of Diagnosis and Treatment. All mental health conditions, bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety, or ADHD, have no defining test. No lab test, no x-ray, and no physical examination reveals the problem. As Dr. Smith did with me in 1992, healthcare providers evaluate those with ADHD based on symptoms. One psychiatrist jokingly told me that he could diagnose the disorder as soon as someone walked into his office and commented on his medical degrees on the wall. It is rare that anyone notices them, but an adult with ADHD will. This psychiatrist confirms his private diagnosis by taking a history, completing a rating scale, and obtaining information from relatives. Another physician told me that adults who believe they have ADHD usually do. The maladaptive behaviors of someone with this disorder are behaviors everyone has. Everyone is distracted, forgetful, or impulsive at one time or another. What distinguishes someone with ADHD is the frequency and severity of the behaviors. Dr. John Rady believes even a mild form of a disorder benefits from treatment, but some physicians and psychologists disagree. They require the patient to show significant ADHD behaviors before they diagnose and treat it. The treatments include medication, cognitive behavioral therapy, and sometimes coaching. When someone breaks an arm, the doctor and the patient recognize what's wrong, how to fix it, and what an ideal recovery will be. Full use of the arm. With a nearsighted patient, the eye doctor determines what's wrong, what to do to improve the patient's sight, and what result he seeks, 20/20 vision, or as close as possible. With many medical conditions, the physician employs various tests, examinations, and lab work to determine what's wrong, what to do to get the patient well, and what wellness will look like. Unfortunately, ADHD is not at this point. Many psychiatrists and primary care practitioners are not adequately trained to identify ADHD in adults or to treat it. It continues to be a challenge to make the diagnosis, determine the best treatment, and assess a favorable outcome. There is not one treatment that works well for every patient, and there's no clear idea of how a treated person should feel and act. No test proves our ADHD is cured or completely controlled. We don't immediately know which and how much medication best corrects our faulty brains and enables us to improve the most. The answers are hard to come by. However, we know that medication is the most effective treatment for ADHD, provided we work with a physician to find the right medication at the proper dose. Sometimes this can be a 2 or 3 month process. Approximately 20% of people with ADHD never find a helpful medication they can tolerate due to the side effects. The public media promote the belief that too many clinicians err on the side of overdiagnosing ADHD. However, researchers believe at least 4.4% of the population have ADHD, and Russell Barkley, PhD, an ADHD researcher, says we treat less than 3% of the population. One concern with overdiagnosing any illness is that it distorts society's expectations of what is normal and not normal, and what requires medical intervention and what does not. Are too many children diagnosed with ADHD when they are normally active or normally distracted? The media and the lay public wrongly believe that children with no ADHD are routinely and incorrectly diagnosed with it. In contrast to these views, experienced ADHD diagnosticians suggest that many youths with ADHD are undiagnosed because their providers cannot document the number of symptoms required by the DSM-5. 25 years ago, Dr. John Rady wrote Shadow Syndromes, in which, based on his clinical experience, he said many patients who met less than the full criteria for a mental illness still benefited from treatment. More recently, Stephen Ferrone, PhD, an ADHD researcher, published research showing that patients with fewer than the required number of symptoms may benefit from treatment. Some believe children or adults want this diagnosis to get school or workplace accommodations. Others question if adults are diagnosed so that they have an excuse for why they have not done well in life. Few people object to the seriously impaired person diagnosed with this disorder, but the issue remains murky for mild or moderate cases. Is it a disorder or is it a mild disability? At what point does it switch from someone being a bit impulsive, a bit disorganized, and a bit inattentive to having a disorder? When is the condition severe enough to warrant taking medication, usually for a lifetime? Again, these questions don't have definitive answers. Issues around treatment can become more heated than issues around diagnosis. The most helpful medications are psychostimulants that are controlled substances. If the medications we took were not controlled substances, there would be less bad press. In the past 25 years, the diagnosis of depression in children increased almost as much as the diagnosis of ADHD in children. But it rarely receives terrible press. The stigma of treatment would be eliminated if our medications were not stimulants. A desirable solution is an over-the-counter product that treats ADHD. This would eliminate the resistance to treatment and there would be less stigma to a diagnosis. Alas, no effective over-the-counter treatment is available. We continue to hear, "I won't give stimulant medication to my child," although stimulants are some of the safest medications when taken as prescribed. The clinician and patient need to evaluate if the improvement in the person's quality of life outweighs any unwarranted negative beliefs about stimulant medication. Stimulant medications are fast-acting. Within a few hours of taking a pill, the patient, or more typically a family member, will know if the medication makes a positive difference. There are several minor side effects, such as loss of appetite and insomnia, but these dissipate over time or resolve by changing the dose or switching to another stimulant. Although popular culture sometimes claims that stimulants cause youth with ADHD to become drug abusers, that is not true. Treatment with stimulants protects patients with ADHD from future substance use disorders. 80% of patients who take a stimulant for their ADHD find it helpful. For me, the choice was easy. I loved my stimulant medication. However, for others, it might not be easy. For them, I recommend education about ADHD from reliable sources. Not the mass media, not concerned family members, not nosy neighbors, and not the sales agents of alternative products. ADHDevidence.org is a reliable source of information. Getting medication for ADHD is like getting a prescription for eyeglasses. If the prescription is not spot on, your vision will not improve as much as it could. The same applies to getting the proper medication at the correct dose for treating ADHD. I tried the various medications, and Ritalin, 10 milligrams taken 3 times a day, helped me the most. Another medication reduced more of my symptoms, but made it hard for me to fall asleep. I learned not to focus on getting a perfect brain. My brain fitness goal became the same as my physical fitness goal, to be fit enough to perform well. My brain fitness goal was to manage my ADHD symptoms well enough to be content with who I am. One woman was diagnosed and treated for her ADHD for 3 years. She took Ritalin, but she continued to have car accidents and procrastinate. She saw a different clinician who believed Ritalin did not help her enough. He switched her to Dexedrine, and she immediately realized what her life could be. A patient may be treated for ADHD, but without comparisons with other medications, he may not be taking the medication that helps the most. When I was diagnosed, only 3 medications, all short-acting, were used in treating ADHD. Today, there are at least 30 with different delivery systems and lengths of effectiveness. However, not all treating clinicians are familiar with or comfortable prescribing many of the newer medications. It is essential to see a clinician knowledgeable about ADHD, a clinician who works with the patient instead of dictating to them. Find a clinician who knows what to expect when the patient takes medication, and who knows the same medication at the same dose does not work for everyone. The patient needs to recognize changes in his behavior. Sometimes he needs another person to help with this, as people with ADHD are poor self-observers. Dr. Edward Hallowell, a psychiatrist and an ADHD expert, tells of a spouse who, after taking medication for 2 weeks, returned to the doctor's office with his wife. The husband said, "The medication hasn't made a bit of difference." Meanwhile, the wife sat there with an astonished look on her face. She interrupted, declaring, "It has made an incredible difference, and sweetheart, if you stop taking it, I'm divorcing you." Sometimes the improvement with medication is dramatic, and the person functions very differently than before. Other times, the changes are subtle. What the person does differently does not surprise her. We act in a way that feels normal, so we do not find it unusual. Often, we can't put our finger on what improved. We only realize our lives have become easier. I don't know what changes happen in Bruce when he takes his medication, but I don't get angry with him on those days. On the days I get angry, I ask, "Did you take your medication today?" His answer is always no. What changes should you watch for when taking medication? Dr. Ted Mandelkorn, a Seattle physician, now retired, who treated children with ADHD, said, "ADHDers on proper medication improve their attention span, concentration, memory, motor coordination, mood, and on-task behavior. They decrease daydreaming, hyperactivity, anger, immature behavior, defiance, and oppositional behavior. Medical treatment allows intellectual capabilities to function appropriately." He adds, "It is important to remember what medication does. Using medication is like putting on glasses. Glasses do not make you behave, write a term paper, or get up in the morning. They allow your eyes to function normally if you open them. You control whether you open your eyes and what you look at." Proper medication for ADHD allows our nervous system to send its chemical messages efficiently. This allows our skills and knowledge to function more normally. Medication does not provide skills or motivation to perform. ADDers often complain of forgotten appointments, incomplete work, mistakes in written work, frequent arguments with a family member or coworkers, excessive activity, and impulsive behaviors. With medication, many of these problem behaviors dramatically improve. Patients successfully treated with medication typically go to bed at night and find most of the day went the way they had planned. If the medication prescribed is not significantly helping with most of these concerns, ask to change the dosage or change to another medication. Medication is not the proper one if it relieves only one dysfunction, such as trouble falling asleep, but not any others. After my diagnosis, I took Ritalin 3 times a day, preferably 30 to 45 minutes before a meal. You are familiar with my memory challenges. Can you imagine how often I forgot to take my medication? I learned to keep a few pills at work. I had a second chance if I forgot to take a pill at home. Taking Ritalin was not, "Wow, what a difference!" But slowly, I got several things in my life under control. Before medication, "I'll take care of it later" meant I would never get back to it. After taking Ritalin, I slowed down and told myself, "This is a problem. You spend time every day searching for your keys, purse, and watch. What are you going to do about it?" It was irritating to force myself to practice the new behaviors. I imagined what I wanted: a life where I spent less time stressed out, annoyed, and disorganized. I made progress and was on a path to a higher level of performance, but hated relying on medication. I read The Unquiet Mind, Kay Redfield Jameson's account of living with bipolar disorder. She stayed in therapy because her therapist reminded her to take her medication. My situation was not as drastic, but I wished I did not have to take medication. Then I learned about a treatment for ADHD that did not involve medication. A psychologist in Tacoma was taking part in a study of low-energy neurofeedback systems, LENS, which claimed to reduce or eliminate the symptoms of several disorders, including ADHD. eager to stop taking medication, I signed up as a participant. Before starting the neurofeedback treatments, the psychologist required me to complete a test of variable attention, TOVA. The TOVA is not used to diagnose ADHD, but measures a person's impulsive and inhibiting behaviors and can evaluate the response to medication. The TOVA would also measure my response to LENS. The TOVA is a sophisticated computer program. For 20 minutes, at 1-second intervals, a tiny black box appears on a computer screen. The research assistant instructed me to push a button as soon as the black box appeared in the top half of the screen. I was not to push the button when the black box appeared anywhere else on the screen. The program recorded the speed and accuracy of my responses, whether my response times increased over time, and if my errors likewise increased. It recorded if I made errors of omission, not pushing the button when I should have, or commission, pushing the button when I should not have. Then it scored my results. The first time I took the TOVA, I was not on medication. I sat in a small, darkened room, staring at the computer screen. This was a test, and I wanted to do well. I sat up straight, ready to hit the button, and stared at the screen, trying not to blink. For the next 20 minutes, it was torture to stare at the screen. I wanted to look away, to gaze at something else, to do anything to break the monotony. The black boxes appeared so fast that, as much as I wanted to, I could not look away. After 5 minutes of intense watching, I was deathly tired and wanted to close my eyes. I fought to stay awake by rocking back and forth, jiggling my legs, stamping my feet, and talking aloud. The research assistant behind me noticed my bizarre mannerisms and wrote them down. But what could I do? I needed to stay alert. At the end of the 20 minutes, I was physically and mentally exhausted, but was satisfied that I did well. It was a tremendous effort, but I thought I earned a perfect score. The following week, I retook the test, this time after taking my medication. I would be a smarter test taker. Instead of sitting hunched toward the screen and tightly clutching the button, I sat back in the chair and relaxed. I held the button in my left hand, rested my right hand on my lap, and cleared away the pencils, paper, and other items around the computer screen so there was nothing to distract me. The TOVA started. The boxes appeared so slowly. Did they change the test since the last time? But they would not do that. This was a research project. Between each box's appearance, my mind wandered, yet I easily responded whenever they appeared on the screen. The TOVA was fun, and I was convinced I was doing well. I stayed relaxed for the whole 20 minutes, with no desire to glance away, no mental exhaustion, and no need to move my body to stay alert and focused. Wow, taking medication for my ADHD makes a difference. Imagine my surprise and dismay when I learned my scores the following week. A score of minus 1.5 or lower indicates ADHD. On the first test, without medication, I scored minus 7.5. The second time, on medication, my score was minus 5.7. There was only a minor improvement in my score. The difference was in how I experienced the two tests. What did my low TOVA scores mean? Was I still significantly ADHD, even on medication? Was a minor improvement in my scores all that medication achieved for me? Before the TOVA test, I was content with how I managed. Now I had questions. Could I function better if I had a brain that worked better? Steve told me to ignore the TOVA scores and to focus on how I felt about myself. But I continued to wonder, how much better can I be? What else can I try? Following my poor TOVA scores, I increased my dose of Ritalin, but quickly realized that raising my dose was not the answer. I functioned better during the day, but woke at 3 a.m. and could not fall back to sleep. I accepted that no medication would improve my TOVA scores. For this reason, I became a willing participant in LENS and signed the paperwork that acknowledged the experimental nature of the treatment and the risks involved. The psychologist assistant ran the treatment sessions. He taped wires to various places on my head, changing locations with each session. I went twice a week for sessions and sat with my eyes closed while the assistant flashed a light at my eyes. I am still confused about the procedure, but the goal was to increase my beta waves that make the brain wakeful and decrease my theta waves that make the brain less alert. If I reported trouble sleeping after any session, the assistant made adjustments in the next session, which resolved my sleep problem. But after one session, I was unable to sleep most of the night. When I went to my next session, the assistant had left the practice, and the psychologist ran the session. However, he was unfamiliar with the intricacies of the LENS protocols. He was unable to calm down my brain's wakeful state. Eager for a treatment that got all of us off medications, I had Bruce and Jackson try LENS. Today, I am skeptical about the treatment. Even after 25 years, there is no research that neurofeedback helps and does no harm. 25 years ago, I was not wary. Eager to get off medication, I signed on the dotted line, no questions asked, and signed for my sons as well. While LENS did not cure my ADHD, there was enough recognizable improvement that I stopped taking medication. The downside was the disruption in my sleep. After spending sleepless night after sleepless night wandering the house at 1 a.m. wide awake, I was utterly discouraged and regretted taking the treatment. Was a sleepless life now my fate? Going without sleep is hard on anyone, but even more so for someone with ADHD. Both Bruce and Jackson also have sleep problems to this day. Because I stopped the neurofeedback, I never got the follow-up TOVA test to see if my scores improved. What else could I try? What else might help? I wished for a test that could show the presence or absence of ADHD in my brain. However, as my sleepless nights continued, I became fearful of trying any other treatment and became content in accepting that my ADHD was not wholly eradicated or cured. Consistent with my experience, neurofeedback is not an effective treatment for ADHD. I saw a sleep specialist who recommended Remerin, a prescription medication. I took one pill and slept all night. I slept most of the following morning as well, and when I attended Toastmasters at noon, I slept through the meeting. The next night, I took part of a pill, but no matter what I tried, I could not find the right amount to take. Besides, Remerin made me ravenously hungry and stopped working after taking it for 5 days. The sleep specialist had me try a few other medications, but none worked. We finally settled on Zolpidem, Ambien's generic form. It was over a year since my last neurofeedback session, and my brain had calmed down somewhat. I fell asleep on 2.5 milligrams of Zolpidem, took another 2.5 milligrams when I woke up during the night, and another 2.5 milligrams if I woke up a second time. This has been my routine for over 20 years. Ironically, I traded taking Ritalin 3 times a day for taking Zolpidem 3 times a night. Ambien / Zolpidem has not become habit-forming for me, although physicians warn about that. Although progress has been made in the diagnosis of ADHD, and today there are many effective medications for its treatment, we still have no way to determine which will work best for any given patient. Prescribers must use trial and error to find the best medication. We still do not know when people with ADHD have been helped enough to be all they can be. That knowledge awaits us someday in the future. Myth: ADHD is an excuse for not trying hard enough. Fact: people with ADHD try very hard to be successful, but their ADHD brain interferes with their ability to focus and work on tasks that are mundane, repetitive, boring, or require mental effort. people with ADHD struggle to accomplish the routine chores of life. It takes a massive mental effort for them to focus even on crucial tasks that are not novel, exciting, and interesting.